Welcome to the Constructive Finance Podcast. Here we talk with elite property developers and consultants about their view of the market, possible challenges and opportunities, and lessons they've learned from their journey to date. Here is your host, Dan Holden.
Welcome to the Constructive Finance Podcast. Today, very happy to catch up with the boys from Ray White New Farm and Co. Thanks very much for your time, guys. Appreciate you coming along.
Thanks,
Dan. So by way of introduction, can you give us an overview of Ray White New Farm?
Sure, I may as well take that one. So Matt Lancashire here, just wanted to give you a quick little insight into Ray White New Farm. So basically, I bought the business in 2012 from Hazley Cush, where I started off with about 12 residential agents. Over the course of the last 5 years, we've now grown across two offices. We have three now with a recent merge with Hazley Cush. We've now running a property management division with three offices as well, covering around 1,100 rentals across the inner city of Brisbane. Across the two businesses now, we have 27 real estate agents and going, primarily focusing on the inner city of Brisbane across a number. Obviously, the peninsula is our main core area, New Farm, Newstead, Tenerife, Fortitude Valley, Spring Hill, Ascot, Hamilton, Albion, all of the inner city range, rings around 5K from the city.
And so Hamish Bowman, sorry, I should have introduced you boys by name as well. Apologies for that. So Hamish Bowman and Matt Lancashire. Hamish, maybe you can give us a bit of insight into your background prior to agency.
Sure. Originally a town planner by profession, did town planning at Queensland University. Sort of always had a bit of a property strand in the family and sort of decided early on to try and use that. I was subdividing land and started tiling blocks of flats for clients and thought this can't be too hard, and got into that sort of smaller entry-level developer side myself with a small syndicate of partners. And further on in my career, wanted to sort of go south for a lot of my partners, so got into property funds management with a couple of your clients. Dan, who yep. you know about, yep. then ended up getting into a large Japanese fund management company called Da Vinci.
Okay.
So I was in the head of capital transactions with them.
Okay.
GSC was interesting for Da Vinci. Yep. So then came back to where I sort of grew up. I had a chat to Matt and thought I'd put the toolbox back on and start sort of selling okay. residential real estate again, which has been the best decision of my career. So
awesome.
Obviously, knowing the area, inner city Brisbane, being grown up there, I think it's been a really exciting time, which is sort of aligned with the growth of the Ray White New Farm business.
Great, okay, that's really interesting. And so Matt, maybe tell us a bit of background prior to your real estate and the years that you've been in it since, and why you took up the challenge of dealing with high-end buyers and sellers.
Sure, well, my background is not quite as elaborate as Hamish's. I came out of school and I worked out at a very early age that I wasn't gifted with brains, but more emotional intelligence.
Cool.
And so my parents, when I finished school, were quite worried about my direction in life. So they forced me to go into a trade. So I became an electrician. Absolutely hated it, but it gave me a really good wealth of knowledge around the construction industry, which has been really transferable into what we do, obviously selling houses, apartments, things like that, which has been I think it's a really underrated skill. And the reason I got into real estate is I actually tried to I took my own house to auction, not myself, through an agent, and the agent failed to sell it. I was desperate for the cash at the time and asked the agent whether or not I could call the buyers myself, because I didn't think that she was doing her job. And I ended up selling it with three offers straight away, and I thought it was pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to get into real estate 11 years ago and wow. haven't sort of looked back since. Second part to your question, obviously, you know, it was a very tough few years at the start. But just started to build relationships, got a few sales under the belt, and now we've sort of positioned ourselves as the go-to people in the higher end sort of space. And that's been generally about 5 years of building relationships over the years.
Awesome. So what would you say is a differentiator for, I guess, your agency to other agencies at the moment?
Well, from sort of an agent point of view within the brand, I think, look, we're very much client focused. So we sort of, we like on the project side to really set in that front end of the project, sort of not being given it and then just to sell. We're really happy to spend that time, whether it's 2 months, 3 months, a year, with the planners, with the interior designers, with the architects, and really understand and sort of value manage the project with the, and I think that we're happy to spend that time at the front end, knowing that it'll come back to us, but some of these things do take more than a year's time, and some of the some other agents just can't see past that, and so we're sort of happy to go along the journey with our clients, and I think that's sort of really sort of put us in good stead now with projects now coming online, the better projects that we're seeing coming.
Particularly with repeat business as well, a lot of our driving success has been through repeat customers and recommended referrals that have come across that through the results that they've been quite happy with those.
Oh, that's good that you guys get involved early. There's nothing worse than getting a bad project with stale product, and it, if it could have been avoided, that's very frustrating. And so maybe more of an industry-wide thing, maybe you guys can give us a bit of insight on your thoughts of these lower kind of commission agencies popping up in the market. I think they've got some mediocre traction in America, and I think one of them's entered the Australian market. What's your kind of view or response on that?
Well, there's two parts to it, because there was obviously the new one into the market is Purple Bricks.
Yep.
In some of the areas outside of inner city zones, I believe they're getting quite a bit of traction.
Yep.
You might have remembered a company coming to Queensland called Go Gecko.
Yep.
Their business went into liquidation, I believe, a few years ago, and there might be a couple floating around, like a couple of franchises, but I'm not sure that that's actually a model that works. With the Purple Bricks, I sort of have a bit of an issue with it, just in the fact of, not that it's a discount agency service, but what it is, it's an upfront fee where they pay the fee at the front and then there's no commission chargeable at the end.
All right.
So it's a reverse sort of strategy.
Yep.
Where you actually get paid and then they don't get a pile on the result.
No responsibility.
No responsibility. So they get the upfront, and then that's done.
Okay.
Which is could be clever for them as a strategy.
Mm.
But what we found is there's only been across our marketplace, I've only seen one sign up of Purple Bricks in our area, and it got changed pretty quickly. So I think that strategy is not a long term sustainable thing, and I think a fee for service thing is you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Thanks for explaining that. Interesting. And so now, just I guess a bit of view about the market. I guess Brisbane as a whole, particularly compared to Sydney and Melbourne, it's being talked down a little bit in terms of oversupply of kind of shoebox apartments. Obviously, the market you guys typically trade in day to day is that higher end, 2 mil to even 20 mil. I know you guys have been involved in some transactions in that size, and that seems to really have gone from strength to strength. Is there anything you can share with us from the front line as to what you think is driving this?
Mm. Well, I think it's interesting. There's always a time in the cycle where we're taken by two Brisbane widgets for the price of one in Sydney and Melbourne, and currently in the cycle, we're seeing a lot of Sydney and Melbourne buyers come out because they can actually buy two properties. Like site property, so 3-bedroom in a good position for $1 million in Brisbane, whereas it's $2 million plus in Sydney. So at the moment, and that's not always typical, so we're actually doing a lot of advertising down south as well, bringing buyers up and showing them our products. So I think that it's just a stage in the cycle. And secondly, I think Brisbane has actually jumped. You know, it's actually a better value proposition for people to live in Brisbane. You know, there's so much more. We're sitting in James Street here, like it's just, Sydney people actually say this does feel a little bit like Double Bay.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago they were saying, look, it's just pretend. So Brisbane's definitely evolved. We have seen a new wave of money coming into Brisbane in more recent years, and that sort of stock that sat there, I call that $3 to $4 million, has all sold in the last year. And now we're sort of the price points have all jumped. And I think it's because there's more depth in the market. We've got definitely more successful business people moving their businesses up from south. To just have a better quality of life.
Mm.
And so, look, I think they're the major drivers.
Okay.
Can I elaborate on that a bit as well? Well, I think Brisbane as a whole is completely undervalued compared to the southern states.
Yep.
Sydney, you can't compare to the rest of the nation. It's its own. It's an international city, which is, at the moment, is so hot.
Mm.
That I was just in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and I've got a few mates that are agents down there. and their bread and butter sales, he'll do, one of the gentlemen, Alexander Phillips, who's a very successful agent, will do anywhere between 20 and 30 sales a month with the average sale price between $3 and $4 million. That's his sweet spot. And in Brisbane, I just had a client, well, 2 years ago, bought up here, sold their house in Bellevue Hill, which was around $12 million. They bought an identical property, same size land, similar style home in New Farm for four. They then sent all their kids to, they pulled their kids out of Scots College and put them into school up here. And rather than paying $50,000 per child, they're paying $15,000 per child and getting discounts on the third child. You know, so the value, the proposition and affordability in Brisbane is huge. And they're predicting that Brisbane or Queensland as such will, population will double within 10 years. So I think Brisbane's going to show some really strong signs over the next short to medium term.
And some great, large scale projects. Obviously the casino, the, you know, house with walls, all that kind of stuff just creates a much more vibrant kind of connecting city,
agreed,
which is exciting. So an interesting one that I look back at is the I think they were both Mirvac projects, actually, now that I think about it, was over at Balmoral, those kind of smaller, they're almost townhouses, but they're townhomes because they're on their own little parcel of land. And I think there was some done in that new farm, Lamington Avenue kind of precinct.
Yeah,
and I remember when they came out, they were kind of like pioneering a little bit, and now they're very sought after kind of stock. I'd be interested to hear from you guys. I mean, how do you approach marketing a, I guess, what is kind of a townhouse, but really is, you know, quite a usable kind of space?
Well, you sort of touched on it. They're townhome style, but they're actually on their own block of land. So they're buying freehold land, which is a big thing. And you mentioned Cutter's Landing, Mirvac, and it's an established brand. It's in a very good pocket. It's right next to the park. You've got the powers behind you. So you've got the boardwalk, which can take you up to Newstead House and back to the city. So there's so many great drivers and why to live there. So it's a very, very desirable location. And look, it's part of sort of inner city living. There's no factor around New Farm, Tenerife, or the inner city suburbs. You're going to have a neighbour. You know, if privacy is a major driver. I say this very often. You don't want to be in the suburb.
No.
You know, go out a couple of rings, you've got privacy. But most people will put that driver down a few dot points to be in that area. So they're very desirable because they're a good product, but they're in such a good position.
And
this day and age, Dan, just to finish off, people don't want to come here. They don't want to be mowing on a Sunday. It's a key point. They want to, and they're actually changing a small block of land, grass these days, and putting AstroTurf on. They don't want any grass. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, right. And so do you see that, like, if someone was to reproduce 50 of those boxes tomorrow, that's saleable right now?
There's townhomes at the moment are definitely the product of choice.
Okay.
If they're not buying a big house.
Yep.
Again, I think you'd have to think about the depth of the market in that particular. You know, there's sub markets within a suburb that work well and some don't. You know, they can only be streets apart. So it depends on where that sits.
Yep.
Those 50 product. 50 is a lot of product.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you get in, you have a different sizing, different. They all have different aspects. You've got to have the, you know, the right.
Got to make it feel unique.
Make it feel unique. Yeah, so I think that'll be a key to that type of.
Getting the land in good locations is probably a crucial part to it as well. If you look at New Farm, Newstead, Tenerife as its own peninsula, there's only 1,947 houses on the peninsula, which is not a great deal. When you break it down, there's only sort of seven houses on the market at the moment. These are freehold sort of houses, which represents less than 1%. So stock's always tight. For those type of products like the Cutter's Landing development, they were selling off the plan between $700,000 and $800,000. Now they're selling between 1.8 and 2.2. So Cutter's Landing, the Mirvac development as a precinct, that has seen some of the highest capital growth out of any residential development in Queensland.
It's amazing, isn't it? And so, Hamish, maybe you could share some insights on what qualities you look for in a new project, and I guess maybe what gives you comfort to take it on. Obviously, for you guys, like you're saying, you get involved early, you share your knowledge and educate those involved early, and obviously you want to see it right through to completion. So what are the elements that you look for that give you the comfort to take on a project and be, I guess, involved with it for such a long period of time?
I think the size of it generally, we do like more boutique developments. We are involved currently in a large development, but we're only in charge of the townhomes, which represent 20 to 30 products. So it's that sort of thing. We're not sort of necessarily geared up. We'd rather associate our brand with homeowners, whether that's an apartment or a house. That's, but we sort of like to think that we're working with our, you know, our family, which is the Ray White community and the youth Tenerife community.
Yep.
I think the important thing we're finding is that buyers are very sophisticated now. You know, they're buying the smaller blocks of land, generally smaller houses. So the functionality within these products have got to be spot on. You can't sell a property for $2 million with a small kitchen.
Mm.
You can't. You know, the living area has got to be perfect. It's got to run. You can't have a small living area. So these sort of areas where, you know, particularly, you know, the females, the ladies spend their time and love to see that it works, or they'll just walk out the door.
Mm.
So to me, it's making a smaller space work, which is just what's happening.
Mm.
Blocks of land are smaller. So look, we really, this day and age, we're dealing with another particular project at the moment. We've got specialists coming in and value managing each space, each bedroom, the master bedroom, how it connects, how it separates, if it's a family price point of product, is there separation? Can they close themselves off? So it's all about working through. It's not just hey, a box and hey, this will sell, it's in a good street. It's down to running through each particular square meter in that product. So
okay.
We see that's very important.
And
then
point.
At the moment it's best in class.
Yep.
Because there is a lot of product. So your specs, your appliances,
your
type of tile, where's the tile come from, the tap fittings. Everything's got to have a story. It just can't be off the shelf because you're going to be in that pack that's just sitting there not selling.
And do you see that there's a optimum time to market a project? Like I know most developers want it sold as early as possible so that they've got less risk and more surety of their profits or of their whatever. Is there an optimum time where you guys say, right, for this particular product, we think you should launch it 90 days prior to title so that people can at least see the bones are there? Or is it? What's your view on that?
So what we're doing really successfully at the moment is that we're actually doing sort of a soft launch to our database.
Yep.
So we've got a really sort of up-to-date current database looking for sort of stock. So we'll, before we go on market, we'll actually do what we call a VIP database mail out for over 3 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And generally we're getting the pre-sales that we need before we need to go onto the market. So we're
right.
getting confidence in the market, the pricing,
yep.
and also the confidence with our client before they actually spend a cent on the marketing. So it's
okay.
sort of our way of entering the market and getting confidence.
Cool.
Well, you look at the White Series, for example, on Terrace Street. It's a 6-townhome development on just a little private, quiet street. In Newfoundland, we sent it out to the database, 1 EDM blast. Went out, we sold 3 with an average sale price of 1.5.
Wow.
You know, which is just off renders, just off finishes board, you know, and bringing people into the office and showing the, and everything was really good quality, and 3 off the bat, and we've sold 5, we've got 1 to go, which the developer's probably going to hold now.
Yeah, wow, that's a great result.
So really great results.
Awesome. Maybe you can give us some insight on what problems you see developers getting themselves into, and maybe how to avoid them from a marketing perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think it's them not listening to us and just building what they might have built in another suburb, that things would have worked. So not knowing, we get quite a few developers coming from outer areas or other suburbs and not intrinsically understanding what works within our little
precinct.
Neighbourhood and precinct. So,
you
know, what worked in Milton mightn't work in our area. So, you know, it's all about very much around Newfoundland Tenerife's got some different views, some view corridors, aspects, the breezes across Tenerife Hill. Everything's different. So it's really, again, the mistakes is that they think that their blueprint that's worked last time will work.
Mm.
And sometimes it doesn't. And
we've
got to say, can we sit down? Can we just massage this? So very much they're the sort of things that we're seeing as a recurring challenge for us.
Yep.
Sort of
local
great,
knowledge.
Great mindset.
Okay, excellent. So going back to the mid-2000s, New Farm was a prime spot for arty, wacky architectural homes that were floating air bridges between bedrooms and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's now getting to a little bit more of a simplistic use of space and a little bit more kind of common layouts. Do we know what the next trend will be to kind of dominate the streets? Have we seen that starting to emerge yet? Or
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation with one of Brisbane's leading, well, he's becoming Australia's leading architects at the moment, Sean Lockyer.
Yep.
So Sean and I had a good conversation. We had a bit of a formula going back a few years ago when Sean left Arkefeld and went out on his own. We ended up doing 13 houses. Like, I'd put him in touch with the client, he'd do the architecturals, we'd get it built and we'd sell it. And it was just working really well. And I was talking about what the new trends are, because originally it was, you know, the walking bridges through. Also, Kevin Hayes was renowned in the 2000s for doing inside-outside areas and really cool designs. What Sean is saying to me yesterday was that in four houses as such is that people are looking for not so much the big spaces internally, but having really good integration going back inside out, entering onto landscaped areas, is the new thing of what they're doing, using good product materials such as concrete has come back. And if you're looking at, you know, they're going away from the timber into more concrete products at the moment. So I think it's going back to what the wackiness was back in 2000. So focusing on inside outside areas.
Excellent. All right. Look forward to seeing that on the street soon. So in terms of the high-end market, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys sold the highest price at 18 mil this year, is that correct?
Yeah, 18.5 million.
Awesome, okay. So we've seen, I guess in Sydney, that would be, you know, almost chump change for most houses. Do you think there is a market for the 20 mil plus stuff in Brisbane in the future or in the coming year?
Yeah, absolutely. I being on the front line in that, I think definitely. I think that there's actually a number of homes in Brisbane right now that could take that title, but they're just not for sale.
Yeah.
So there's a number of houses in our marketplace, in New Farm, Newstead, Tenerife. I know of three houses that could break the title of that. Also, there's a number of properties in Ascot, Hamilton, that are also in that sort of 20 million price point, but they just haven't come for sale. The last 2 years, there's only been the prices have been, the first sale was in 2015, where I managed to sell Don O'Rourke's property for 12 million on the riverfront in Ascot, in Hamilton, which was a really good sale. That was one of the first ones, which was sold to Asian interest.
Yep.
That was one of the first sales of us seeing Asian interest in Brisbane. Then Gina Reinhart was able to purchase the property in Arran Avenue for 14 million and bought the block next door, which made it a $18 million transaction. And then the one that happened at One Leopard Street, Kangaroo Point, just this year was 18.5 million, which was also sold to Asian interest. Although there were three other offers on the property that were local Brisbane people that were in the close vicinity. So to answer your question, there's absolutely...
There's buyers there for 20
buyers months. Around for it,
okay.
Just not the properties to service them yet.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, that's good to hear. So over the cycles, we've seen lots of different sales gimmicks, I guess, from agents. What's your view, I guess, on scantily dressed models and Ferraris to sell luxury houses? Does it get more buyers? Does it get more kind of market presence? Does it get a better price?
Well, I'll start that one off. It's not my model.
Yep.
I don't think it's our office. I think for us, we're all about educating our buyers, you know, and more about sort of, buyers want to know what's going on a regular basis, and the market does. So we're all about communicating current sales. You know, in terms of marketing, I think there's a lot smarter current social ways to do it, necessarily. I don't think it's sort of what we think. Probably have like to think we've got probably more sophisticated approach to selling real estate now in our neighbourhood at the moment.
Well, I think it's just a different, a whole different model. You know, to get models and things like that, I don't know whether that could be a deterrent for some people. We like to keep it pretty vanilla and make sure that we're actually property focused, not model focused or car focused. Yeah. I think people can sort of see through all of that sort of thing. But, you know, in some cases I've seen it work really effectively where the number of hits on a property like that has gone viral based upon, I don't know whether people think it's funny and it goes viral because of that, or whether it actually helps in the sale process. I just think, look, that it's not our model, like Hamish mentioned, but look, you know, if we found that that actually did work and it did increase the sale price, then it would be something that we'd have to look into for sure.
So do you guys foresee any next big game changer, whether it's tech disruptor or something like that, in the way you deliver your service or the way that your kind of industry delivers what it's doing at the moment? Is there anything on the horizon you might know of?
Yeah, look, I've just finished doing a Harvard Business School, which was interesting. And I think, you know, they all talk about it. You know, you either adapt or die. Mm. And look, there's some big players that look like they will come into the property market at some point, i.e. Facebook, Google. There's always that sort of threat. And they have got the financial capacity to be able to invest big in trying to do that. However, real estate is such a service and, you know, driven industry. And I think, you know, losing that whole touch of face-to-face negotiation, and I just don't see that happening in the next short term. We watch it closely because, yeah, if we don't move with the market, move with the trends, then we'll be left behind. But look, I think to answer the question, I think the only thing I can see foreseeable in the next short to medium term would be the new technology that they're doing, the visual open homes and all of those sorts of things with the Octopus Rift, I think they call it. And then Facebook and Google doing those sorts of things. Because Google, obviously, people don't realise that they actually own you. Like, they own your identity because, you know, I heard that they're doing things where you've got Google Maps on your phone, you can drive past a house and it notifies you that that house is actually for sale and can put you in touch with an owner or give you a price, and you can do an offer and all those sorts of things. So, you know, that's things that we'll keep a close eye on, but whether or not that's in the short term, who knows?
Yeah, okay. That'll be interesting to see it unfold if it does, if they get there. So, Matt, maybe a question more to you as a leader of the office. It's often a case where people can work anywhere for a similar kind of dollar, but it's the challenge and the engagement that attracts the best team. So how do you approach your leadership towards the 30 or 40 people that are in your business?
Yeah, well, look, people can go anywhere. So we have to provide really good service proposition for our team. And, you know, what I take the approach on is we actually work for them, not vice versa. So, you know, obviously a lot of we like to be able to have a team that we can service. So if I felt like I was dropping the service for my team and providing value, then people would go. We have a really big back-end support. So we've got a value team of five back-end administrators that help the business keep ticking over. I've also just done a recent merge with Hazley Cush to bring him in to actually help me with that, because it was getting to a point where, you know, there's only so many hats you can wear. So we've got a really good middle management system behind that as well. And then obviously being the biggest agency in it, across our marketplaces as well, we have quite a large database and we actually look after the team with, you know, referrals and the support on the back end. That's probably my view on it. Hamish, happy for you to talk openly about why you're there.
Well, look, you can run your own business within the business, which I like. So, you know, you have your own freedom, but you obviously come within the brand. So you can, and within the business, you can build your own team. So you sort of feel like you're a business owner anyway. And obviously, you know, we've got a really good culture in the office.
Cool.
You know, for welcome anyone to come in and walk through our office. It's a really good, vibrant sort of place to work. So, look, having worked in several different working environments, it's definitely the most exciting, interesting one that I've been part of.
Cool. And so for a business, like you say, you're very dominant in your patch. What do you think is the future for your business? Is it vertical integration into other sectors, or is it geographic expansion to, you know, 500, 1,000 sales a year? How does the growth look?
I might start that. It's interesting because in the old days, you used to have your patch in the street and work. And the model going forward is very much relationship driven. So whilst you might have your office in New Farm, you're not domiciled to that area. We do a lot of business in and around off our relationships, inner city Brisbane. So you can actually run a business from New Farm all over inner city Brisbane if you want. You know, and middle ground, you're in Fitzroy proper at the moment. Very high end house. So it's for us, it's more the process, the relationship and the systems for the results. So it's more about that than just farming a patch.
Growth for growth's sake.
Yeah.
As isn't that Ryan Serhant's thing? Growth in always.
Always.
Cool. Cool. So in terms of the crystal ball, Hamish, I'd be keen to get your view on the marketplace maybe over the next 12 months.
Yep. I think the next 12 months, it's ever with more stock coming online, in particularly that sort of price point, that middle range market, it's a flight to quality. You've just got to have your property's got to be better dressed up, right? Else you're just going to be back with the pack. And in the high end, if it's more about, as Matt touched on, the stock. If you're a seller at the moment and you're thinking about it, it's a great time to be on the market because you won't be with it much other stock. So for us, it's all about matching sort of our brand with quality stock, quality stock with. So yeah, so we're focusing in. You know, we've had discussions 2 years ago with developers and owners, which we're just seeing. We're just starting to recommend coming onto the market now.
Yeah, right.
As you said in your press, it's a great time to be entering the market if you've got all the basics right
for the right projects. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And so, Matt, what's your view maybe on the next 3 years?
3 years is, crystal ball sort of stuff. Echoing what Hamish said, is short to medium term, I think it's going to be much the same. I think a lot of the factors will come down to what happens in Sydney, because obviously, you know, the interest rates have been held again yesterday. It's still at historic low rates, like 1.5% is the cash rate, which is fantastic. Look, I don't know, if the government tries to slow down Sydney, I think that's going to affect the whole nation. So I don't know if that will do anything to that. As long as interest rates remain low, confidence is at an all-time high. It's amazing. Like people are moving quicker on property. In the high end, generally it filters down from the high end. Once the high end starts to move, it filters down. And when we were talking before, you know, there's been in Brisbane just in the last 12 months for the financial year, there were three sales over $10 million, which is pretty significant considering there's only been one every year over the past 3 years. So that's a huge factor. And I think over the next three, I think for that short to medium term, unless anything happens drastic with the world economy, I think Australia's going to be pretty strong.
And hopefully a 20 mil plus sale.
Absolutely.
That'll be good to see.
With us, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully.
So a question I'd like to hear from each of you. You've both had a nice long career in property. What would you say to a younger you about navigating the game of property?
I would suggest, having made a few mistakes myself, is to focus in on one thing. Don't spread yourself too thin as a developer. I think, you know, different markets, different suburbs, and you can get yourself in trouble. It's just do one properly, get it set, and then move on. Don't just think that this is easy, finance is easy, you can get well funded, bring in partners, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Get capital, and then all of a sudden market shifts and I would just say, don't be greedy. Do it properly, get set, and then move on. That would be my advice.
I think that's wise. I think we do see some developers who have success in one particular thing, they copy and paste that same business case onto something else and it doesn't work.
Yep.
So I think that's good. And Matt?
Do you want me to talk in a property development or
no, property generally?
As
yeah.
in property,
as a younger you,
as an agent
talking
going
to yourself
through again?
15 years ago.
Oh, geez, I actually rewrote this. I wrote this down the other day after being at the Harvard Business School, and I think if it was a young me going again, for example, I would have probably gone and worked under an experienced person. I would have watched a lot of the human behaviour and things that were happening. I'd probably reverse engineer the structure of what, you know, how it all works and dissect it backwards, and then work your butt off. And I think it's one thing I think that a lot of people fall backwards in agency is that they really underestimate product knowledge and market knowledge, and there's only so long you can fake it for. And I believe, you know, you look at agency for an example, is it's the only industry where you don't need a tertiary education and your salary is uncapped, whereas you look at every other career outside of that. So become a lawyer, you need a law degree, and it's university, you need to study, you need to keep current, and I think you need to be, you know, very knowledgeable about all key aspects to it around the property game.
Okay, awesome. And so, most important question, guys, what's the best bottle of wine you had recently?
The best I've had is Penfold 407. I had the developer that we closed out an express of interest last week, so I was on the spot. You just happened to have it there on his front veranda on a Saturday afternoon. So
good celebration.
The best in the world, but it was just the current one, which I was.
Sometimes the occasion makes the wine. So that's
1998 as well. So I had a couple of years on it.
Perfect, Matt.
I remember mine specifically because it was 7 months ago. Because I haven't had a drink in 7 months.
There you go.
I'm taking the year off drinking, and it was Hentley's Farm 2009 Clos Otto from Barossa.
Nice.
Which was delicious. And it's
Sounds like the occasion made that one too.
It
saying
did.
Sayonara for a year. That's a big commitment. Awesome. Well, thanks very much for your time, guys. Very insightful to get some, share some knowledge from the front line of both luxury and boutique apartments off the plan and see the sales coming through in the high end. I think it'll be very exciting to see 20 mil plus cracked in the coming years. Thanks, guys, very much.
Thanks for having
That's good.
Dan.
Thanks, Appreciate Dan. It. Thanks very much.
You have been listening to the Constructive Finance Podcast hosted by Dan Holden, the founder of Holden Capital, Australia's number one commercial finance firm. If you would like to get constructive with your finance, you can contact one of their finance experts on 07 3171 4200. Or, if you'd like to get more informed on Holden Capital, or to get more informed about all things construction finance, visit their knowledge library on their website, www.holdencapital.com.au.